everyone, and welcome to the Influence Call today. Today is June 8th, 2011. My name is Kurt Mortensen. We're going to spend some time to talk about the power of influence, what to apply this week, what to do, and then, of course, take your questions. This week, I thought we'd talk a little bit, do a little catch-up as far as the questions that are being answered, and take your questions. And especially, I want you to think about, what are some of the influence challenges that you're running into? What are the best things that I can help you with as far as increasing your income and increasing your ability to influence? That's our goal today. That's what we want. I have a list of questions that I can answer, but this calls for you. I know a lot of you on the replay line. But if you have a certain question that you want answered, please let me know. So let me lead off with a question I've seen quite a bit, and then I'll open it up for questions. And if you have, again, think about what is that one thing you're running into? How can I help you solve that is what we're going to be talking about. If it's your first time, welcome aboard, and let's get into it. Remember, this call is being recorded. We will post the recording at live. You can access it that at any time and ask your questions there. Now, the theme to see what the questions I'm being asked is, when does it become persuasion? When is it persuasion? When is it persuasion? How do you get people to want to do what you want them to do? Is manipulation? Mind tricks? Telling people to do things and doing it because they and it comes back a lot. I think the biggest thing, it comes back to intent. What do you really intend? Are you hiding something? Are you trying to persuade them to become other people? I think the biggest factor is your heart, of course, and of course your intent. What are you really trying to accomplish? If you're hiding something, if you're not revealing all the truth, if you don't intend to keep all your promises, then it probably would border manipulation. They're very close. You know, ask people, is persuasion good or bad? And I ask them, is gravity good or bad? Well, it depends. Gravity is good if you're walking. It's bad if you're falling from a tree. Persuasion is used to get children to be on drugs, and persuasion is used to get children off drugs. It's a useful thing. It's how you use it. I believe that when you have a product or a service that you really believe in, that you have a moral and ethical obligation to persuade people. Because if you don't, somebody with half your ethics, half your IQ, will persuade them and not fulfill their obligations and not help them to where they need to be. Something you believe in, it's time to start persuading because someone can persuade them. And it might as well be you if you're going to provide the best product and the best service. So what is the intent? What are you really trying to accomplish? What do you really want to do? And I don't know why people get so tense and uncomfortable about that, but the reality is it's a neutral thing. We all persuade for a living as parents, teachers, leaders, and managers, but it's up to us to persuade people to see the value of our product and service. So that's kind of lay it down. What's your intent? Are you really trying to help them and serve them? Are you revealing all the truth and the whole truth? Are you holding things back? For all things to ask yourself as you go through that process. So that's a question we get quite a bit. And people tend to get nervous there, and that's okay. I'm okay with that. As long as we understand that we're here to persuade for a living. So keep thinking about your questions. One more I want to address before I open it up to the group, as you're thinking about this, is I had a lot of questions with the law of obligation, the law of reciprocity. Now, what's the law? Remember, there's 12 laws of persuasion. The Magnetic Persuasion series. Now, what this law states is when you give something to something, they're more inclined to give something back. And this can really quickly get to manipulation. But what I'm saying is when you give somebody something, whether it be a compliment or a gift or a report or your time or even a smile, it doesn't guarantee they're going to do business with you. It just puts you on the top of the list. And it comes back to intent. What are you really trying to accomplish? What are you really trying to do? Now, we see it too often in car sales where they, you know, give you a soda and they want to sell your car and it's perceived as manipulation. We have plenty of family and friends who give us something and 2 months later they say, oh, remember the time I gave you that? That would be manipulation. But when we give somebody something, it's with pure intent. It's just putting us top of the list. And it's helping us realize that it is something that we can do to help persuade people. It's not a manipulation thing. In fact, it's part of the law of reciprocity that everyone can understand. Is called, it's probably what I just put down, is reciprocal concessions. Reciprocal concessions. And that's the technical term, that's the scientific term, but this is so important to understand with people. Remember, when you're trying to persuade someone, even though they need it, want it, like it, and can afford it, okay, it's perfect fit, it's human nature that they're going to resist you, even though it's perfect. See, the moment they sense you're going to try to persuade them to do something, they're going to resist you. So what can you do? So when you look at negotiation or any sales process or any persuasion process, what a reciprocal concession is, this is part of the law of reciprocity, what that is, and let me just kind of simplify it for you, is if you let them persuade you on a certain item, they're more open down the road during that negotiation to be persuaded. I hope you're catching this. This is so important to understand. So if along the way you're resistant, you're not being persuaded at all, you're not bending at all, you're being firm, then they're going to be firm. They're going to be resistant. They're not going to be persuaded. But if it's a minor issue, it could even be where to meet, where to have lunch, what percentage rate things that maybe not matter that much to you. If you let them persuade you on a few of the minor issues, again, this is reciprocal concessions, they are more open to be persuaded on the other issues. So if you're encountering a lot of resistance in a persuasion encounter or in negotiation, let them persuade you on a few of the minor issues. Let them convince you on a few of those minor things. Then down the road, they're more open to persuasion. But if you're not going to be persuaded, then that resistance comes in and they are going to be persuaded. So good questions. Hopefully that answers those questions. I've got a few more that I need to address. Let me open it up to the group. Are there any questions or obstacles or challenges that you're running into in the world of persuasion and negotiation? A very quiet group today. That's okay. I've got plenty of questions here. Just think about it. I'm here to help you out. My next question talks about the applications, but this is within the law of distance. Now, remember, there's 12 laws of persuasion. How the law of gravity works all the time, the laws of persuasion work all the time, but you really need to have to understand how to apply them. And if you look at the 12 laws of persuasion, the law of dissonance is probably the most fascinating, the most complicated, the most interesting, at least to me. Because it's one of those things that people don't think about. Now, one of the subsets of the law of dissonance is called FITD, which stands for foot in the door. Let me put it to you this way. When you're in a persuasion process, no matter what your product or service is, your goal is to get as many commitments as possible, get as many yeses as possible. Because the more yeses that you get, the easier it is to get a yes down the road. If you haven't got any yeses and you finally ask them to do business with you and that's the first yes, it's very difficult. You have to understand the consumer mindset here. That when they meet you, when they're talking to you for the first time, they're looking for every reason why they should not do business with you. And that's an important thing. And then once they find one reason to do business with you, then everything falls into place. Let me give you an example. Knox and Inkster, they're social psychologists. They did a lot of studies on persuasion and influence. They did a study up in Canada. They would go to a horse racing track, and they would interview people in line before they placed a bet and after they placed a bet. Okay, pretty simple. I asked people, do you think people were more confident in their decision as far as which horse they were going to bet on before they placed a bet or after they placed a bet? And universally, most people say after. Because you have to understand the human brain needs to be right. So once we put our money down, we've made the right decision. It's very difficult to say that we were wrong. And that's what the study showed. And so what we're saying is if you can get a lot of yeses, if you can get them to agree to what you're trying to propose, then you do not need to tell them everything there is to know about your product or service. Let me just illustrate this with a study. There was a study done on a beach on the East Coast, and they would bring somebody in, they put down a towel and a CD player, and they listen to the CD for a while, and they get up and walk away and leave the CD player on the towel. And there was someone about 10 feet away, and this person would walk off. And here would come a Confederate. That's somebody that's in on the study. So this Confederate was a thief, and they would steal the CD player as this person, 10 feet away, was watching them. You have to think to yourself, what percent of those people would risk personal harm to stop the thief? It was obvious they were stealing the CD player. Everyone knew they were stealing the CD player. And the answer is 20%. 20% of the people would risk personal harm to stop the thief. Now let's change it up a little bit. They put the towel down, put the CD player down, stand up, get to walk away. They turn to the person that was 10 feet away and did this hundreds of times and say, will you watch my things? And ultimately the person would say yes. And when the thief would come 10, 20 minutes later, 95% would risk personal harm. So it went from 20% to 95% just from that one question. So what does that mean to you as a persuader? A lot. It means get as many yeses as possible, as many commitments as possible during your persuasive presentation. And we notice with great persuaders, they always start with the easy questions first. You see this with encyclopedia salespeople. They knock on people's doors and say, do you live here? And they're like, yes. Do you love your children? Yes, and they ultimately lead them down 20 questions, and the 20 questions is getting them to buy encyclopedias. So that's very important. Now, what foot in the door is, long story short, to get to that, what foot in the door is you begin with a small request, a small commitment, and you follow up with a larger request. It's easier to get them to say yes on the smaller things than it is the bigger things. And let me tell you why this is so important. If you're getting a lot of no's in your persuasion attempts, a lot of times what we notice is what you're asking is too big. It's too much. You need to break it down to smaller pieces. Here are the studies. At a university, they asked students to, this is what they said, will you participate in an early morning study Saturday at 6 a.m. on sensory perception? Okay. Students, 6 a.m. on Saturday. They did get, with that particular question, they got 24% to say yes. Now, here's what doubled the amount of yeses. This is all they did. This should be a very big eye-opener for you. The next time they're around, they said, we're doing a study on sensory perception. Do you want to participate? Well, yes. It's on Saturday. Are you available? Well, yes. It's at 6 a.m. Will you be there? So what they took was their first question and divided it into three yeses, smaller yeses, and the compliance rate went from 24% to 56%. You catching that? Doubled. So what I'm saying here, if you're getting a lot of no's, what you're asking is too big, you need to break it down into smaller yeses. Into smaller yeses. You can get them to do a little bit at a time. Even, for example, the American Cancer Society would, it's kind of sneaky, I guess, but they'd call people up and do a survey. they had a series about probably 20 questions, and one of the questions was, hey, if the American Cancer Society ever called you to go door-to-door in your neighborhood to solicit funds for the American Cancer Society, would you use it? Now, remember, this is a survey, and a lot of people said yes. Then guess what? 2 weeks later, the American Cancer Society would call, hey, can you go door-to-door? And they forgot about this survey, but when they were able to do that survey, there was a 700% increase in yeses. The power of foot in the door is get as many yeses as possible, get as many commitments as possible. And when you can do that, then it's much easier to get the yes. Now, on the flip side, if you're getting a lot of no's, what you're asking is too big, and you need to break it down into smaller yeses. Very good question. Let me open up for the group. Any other questions to the group you want to ask me? Because as we talk about commitments, we know that small commitments lead to larger commitments. We're talking about commitments. You always want to get people to write them down. So if you're even at a restaurant, in a negotiation, if you can get them to write it down on a napkin, they're more likely to fulfill that commitment than if it's just in their mind or send you an email or send you a text. We know that public commitments are stronger than private commitments. So if you can make it public, it's more powerful. We see this with weight loss centers. What do? So you join a weight loss center. What they do is they have you call your 10 family and friends, let them know what you're doing, what's happening, because that now makes it public, and the chances are more, I'm going to put this, the chances are increased that you're going to keep your commitments. So again, FITD or foot in the door. Great question. Remember, your questions can be submitted at whywhypersuasion.com. It's also the location of the replay line. In the future, we are looking to go to a more of a webinar visual on gotowebinar.com. I'll let you know. I'll notify you when that's going to happen. But that's going to be our next phase, so it's not just the audio. It'll also be the visual. I'll keep you posted on that. Any other questions? Before I address some of these other questions. Okay, well, let me ask another. Here's another question. It says, Kurt, I have a lot of clients that are in denial. They don't think they need my product or service. Well, welcome to human nature. It's very difficult for people to admit they have a challenge, they have a problem, they have a setback, and they get in the denial phase. I mean, you look at a foreclosure, a home going into foreclosure. The person going into foreclosure is going to blame the government, the taxes, their neighbor, Uncle Fred, their previous employer, before they look to themselves. Now, if you tell them that they're wrong and it's their fault, then it'll have the opposite effect. Anybody you back into a corner will come out and attack you. It's even true with the animal kingdom. I went to a nature preserve once, and there's a baby moose went into this small pond and was just grazing, and everyone was excited. It was a moose, and they surrounded the pond, and there was no exit for this baby moose. And I'll tell you, that baby moose freaked out. The mother came and freaked out, and it was a bad situation. A lot of scared people. Anytime you back anybody into a corner or tell them that they're wrong, you're going to have some very interesting consequences. If you had a friend that say, hey, help me lose weight. I want you to help me lose weight. And he comes home and just eaten 12 Krispy Kreme donuts. And he say, hey, what are you thinking? You better watch out because it's going to be your fault. So when someone's in denial, and you have to be very careful here. And we see this quite a bit, whether it be weight loss or a foreclosure or needing a home-based business or whatever it is. A lot of people say, I don't need it. Doesn't apply. Doesn't matter. That's all denial. So what do you do? Interesting
because Henry Ford, I love his quote, he said, most people spend more time and energy going around their problems than trying to solve them. And that's human nature. And we get into this blame cycle where it's not our fault. So it's kind of a slippery slope, because it is their fault, but if you tell them it's their fault, it won't be their fault, it'll be your fault, so what do you do? Well, as I look at top persuaders and people that are very successful in persuasion, the answer to the question is you need to help them realize it is their fault through questions and not telling them. Top persuaders ask 3 times more questions than the average persuader. And when you can ask the right questions, then they realize for themselves they have a problem. And as a persuader, you have a solution to their problem. Now, as a persuader, you always, remember we talked about you ask the easiest questions first. Ask open-ended questions because they can get more information that way. But realize that every time you ask a question, it gets answered. Whether it's mentally or verbally, it does get answered. If you ever listen to a conversation and ask a question, you can quickly find out their needs and their wants. Top persuaders ask 3 times more questions than the average person. Because when you can ask the right questions, they'll tell you everything you need to know to persuade them. So many people are so caught up in vomiting the 37 reasons they should do business together that they miss out on asking questions. If someone's in denial, it's not their fault, it's not their problem, they don't need to do anything about it, it's not an issue right now, you start asking questions. Ask the easiest questions first. Ask open-ended questions. And you now become a consultant to the sales person. Very good question. All right, do you have any questions out there? Ask me now or forever hold your peace. All right. Very easy. So remember, Why Persuasion, whypersuasion.com will be the replay line. We'll get that up in the next 24 hours. If you have any questions, submit those to whypersuasion.com. What I want you to work on this week is the FITD. I want you to start asking smaller questions to get more yeses. If at any part during your presentation or during your persuasion cycle you're getting a lot of no's, I want you to take that portion and break it down into 3-4 questions. You will see yourself get more yeses. That's what I want you to work on. FITD, foot in the door, get more yeses. Remember, if you're getting the yes, because what you're asking is too big. Our goal for you, of course, is go out there, persuade with power. Want you to make this happen. If you have any questions, submit those to whypersuasion.com. But everyone have an incredible week. And we'll talk to you next week. Good night, everyone.